You make this rather snappy, won't you? I have some very heavy thinking to do before 10 o'clock.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Get It Right Texoma with Mike Hendren, Gary McAdams, Trey Sorala. Very special guest in the studio with us this week is Ron Kitchens. He is the president and CEO of the Wichita Falls Chamber of Commerce. Ron, how are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Hey, you know, we talk about local events on this show a lot. We talk about news, you know, local, state, national, international, interstellar, whatever we got. And so we're going to open this morning with a couple of local events that I know you probably are very familiar with and have probably got some involvement with. The Jack Stevens Legacy Exhibit is going on at the Kemp Center for the Arts. It's going on through the 20th of this month. Hard to believe we're in April already.
Yeah.
But here we are. And it goes on through the 20th this month. And Jack Stevens, terrific local artist. Jack passed away not too long ago. A few years ago, but a tremendous, tremendous artist left behind an incredible body of work, and a whole lot of it is available for you to see.
It's amazing. If you haven't seen it, it's an amazing exhibit.
Well, one of the really neat things about it, too, is Jack wrote personalized letters or notes to people that he was commissioned to do art for.
That's correct.
And some of that stuff is actually part of the exhibit as well. Some of the people that have their art on loan that they commissioned Jack to do, they have the note that the personalized note that he wrote to it, which it's the humanity kind of ties the whole thing in. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Well, it gives him a very personal connection, not just to the people that purchased the artworks from him or that commissioned work from him, but also just to the community at large. You know, it makes it feel like he really is part of the area, part of the community here. And you don't get that with a lot of artists. A lot of artists are very standoffish people, very private, very aloof. Yeah.
Jack
was not that way at all. Parks and Recreation After School Fishing Program starts April 30 here in Wichita Falls. And the dates are April 30, May 2nd, May 7th, May 5th, or May 9th, rather, 4:30 to 6:30. Each evening at South Weeks Pond, kids 5 through 16 get expert instruction from Texas Parks and Wildlife pros on how to set drag, reel in a fish, land a fish, all that good stuff, how to fish.
Absolutely.
How to fish effectively.
Expert instruction doesn't mean y'all stick that worm on there and throw it out yonder.
No.
Well, that's
actually being taught.
Taught properly.
How to
tie. And basically setting a drag is means something much different in the fishing world than it does in some other places.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much for clarifying
that. The nice thing about this as well is they do have some loaner equipment.
They do.
If you don't have your own fishing pole and your own tackle,
they can help you out with that.
Yeah, they can fix you up. But spaces are limited and the amount of equipment is limited, so be sure you get out there early or let somebody know. But if you have your own or you can borrow some tackle from somebody or something, take your own and let somebody who doesn't have the stuff borrow it.
Again, that kicks off April 30th. South Weeks Pond. 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. each evening. Ron Kitchens, our guest, as we introduced just a moment ago. Ron, you've been with the Chamber here in Wichita Falls how long now?
Oh, 15 months? Yeah, 15 months.
15 months. All right.
He's measuring like you do a baby.
Yeah. Measuring like dog years. Yeah. It's been 8 years. Yeah.
Feels like forever. But you just recently got back from a trip overseas, did you?
I did. Just got back from Korea, where we were, you know, when we look at the kind of future of energy, we know oil and gas is going to always be important. Yep. But we also know batteries are becoming more and more important, mm-hmm. whether it's the battery in your watch, or it's the battery that's going to drive the new line of vehicles, or batteries that are going to store wind energy in the field and then put them into the system when they're needed. So the Koreans dominate the world battery market.
Oh, wow.
So it used to be the Chinese, but the Chinese are kind of, you know, off the grid right now from business standpoint. The Koreans have stepped in. So we want to be that place that says, hey, you know, we want your business. And, you know, from our standpoint, it was a great opportunity because it was essentially one representative from each of the southern states, which is kind of Texas to Maryland. I don't really think of Maryland as southern.
Yeah. Not really.
But, the U.S. trade folks do. And so we were there 12 of us pitching our wares. And so we spent 5 days in Korea. It takes a day to get there and a day to get back, but it great opportunity to sell things. When we were there, President Trump made the announcement that he wasn't a big fan of electric vehicles and thought that wasn't going to happen. And so our meetings got less interesting after he made that announcement. So we're going to let's see what happens. But it's important. And, you know, we know that the hydrogen plant is part of our energy future.
Oh, yeah.
Batteries are part of our future. Wind, solar. You know, it's a bit like improv comedy. It's not or, it's and.
Right.
And so we've got to get good at all of this stuff if we want to be recognized in the energy sector.
Well, I know, and it's been a while since I had these conversations, but I've had a number of people in the oil and gas industry, people that are, investors and other individuals tell me, we have a substantial amount of reserves in this country. Mm-hmm. Texas has massive reserves. We've got enough. I had one guy tell me, he said, we have natural gas reserves in this country that we haven't even tapped into yet, that we haven't even touched yet. If you took everything that we have right now, we've got at least a 200 to 300 year supply of natural gas in the ground, potentially, depending upon how we use it, applications, consumption, et cetera. He said all that factors in, but it's there. And a lot of it we haven't even touched yet because, number one, we don't need to. And number two, it's cost. It all comes down to dollars and cents. We know that. Same thing with the EVs. And I've read recently where several companies are starting to back off their plans for these EVs. The market appetite on the consumer end seems to be weakening, not strengthening. Is that something that's
absolutely. Electric vehicles are sales have stalled. You know, the sales, and we'll never really know what the sales appetite was because there were so much state and federal subsidies. In a lot of these states that we never know what the real appetite was.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is we don't have a grid that would handle charging all these vehicles.
Nope.
Right.
You know, vehicles, electric vehicles are amazing, but the reality of the future is probably hybrid vehicles. I grew up in an ag community. You know, I have ranching and farming in my background.
Yep.
And you learn to be a good steward.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing you learn when you're in agriculture is your responsibility is to be a good steward of resources. And so we know that particularly natural gas is a great asset.
Yes.
It doesn't mean we can't also do solar because it's a great asset.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to do. But it's going to take batteries to store that, so we've got it when we need it, not when it's generating. And so we can do all of these things well, but I think this idea of, in most places, of an all-electric vehicle fleet, you know, Hertz tried it
before they lost
with,
a bunch.
With Tesla lost their hide in it.
Yeah.
I just don't think we're ready. I don't think environmentally ready. I don't think we're ready from a grid standpoint, and we certainly are not ready for the cost. I mean, the average American can't afford one of those vehicles, certainly unsubsidized.
But
you're right, though. You do want to have both options because there is a place for electric vehicles, and there are a place for especially the hybrid vehicles. Yeah. And the nice thing what's happened was with the electric vehicle development that's happened. Now you can back off and you can make some really nice hybrids based on this. So now you have your battery technology has really taken off.
Yeah.
So we've learned a lot about batteries. We may learn to make them more efficient where they charge faster and that sort of thing. But then you stick a small gas-powered fuel-powered engine, whether it's going to be natural gas or fuel or gas or gasoline or whatever it is, with that to help charge that battery. It can be the best of both worlds.
Yeah, for a while there, you would see commercial vehicles in particular that, and it would say on the vehicle, it was liquefied natural gas running that vehicle.
Yep.
And there seemed to be a trend toward that. I don't see quite as much of that anymore, but maybe we get back to some of that too at some point. I want to bring it
in hydrogen. I went and looked at Toyota's got an all-hydrogen vehicle. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, imagine these canisters. Remember the old sodas canisters that, you know, Coke would deliver you a canister and it'd be about a foot square and about or tall, round, and 3 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That's what these canisters look like. Yeah. And they go in and lock, and then that's the power source for the vehicle.
Right.
And so the one I saw had four, but it was an all-hydrogen vehicle. But this idea of having a hydrogen-powered engine with batteries, all of a sudden, it's not Star Trek anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
This stuff's a reality.
Yeah. A lot of things aren't Star Trek anymore.
Kawasaki actually is working on a concept motorcycle that's hydrogen-powered.
Yeah.
Saw it at the Kawasaki dealer show in Phoenix.
Really?
Yep.
Awesome. Well, let's bring it a little closer to home here and more local here. With the Chamber of Commerce, your goal with the Chamber is to try to attract new industry
more and
to
better
our
jobs.
City, more and better jobs, yeah.
That is your – jobs is your thing.
More and better jobs.
Ever since you've been to town, I've heard you speak at – on the radio show, I've heard you speak at numerous things, and jobs. That is your key. Tell us why the
greatest force for change is a job.
I love that.
So a job just doesn't change today. We all know that feeling of getting your paycheck and having a little dough in your pocket that you make decisions with, but it also changes the future of your family, and we know it psychologically changes your brain.
Yeah.
Yep.
But folks that grew up in poverty have fight or flight mentalities, and it's no different with their job. And so when you have a steady job that pays a good salary and has benefits, it literally changes the chemistry of your brain and then changes the future of your family. You begin to save. You begin to talk about college. You begin to talk about future. Talk about retirement. A job changes everything.
Yeah.
And so if we focus on jobs, then we can get everything else we want. It's a little Zig Ziglar thing. You can have anything you want in this world, help enough other people get what they want. And in our case, they want is more and better jobs.
So, you know, with the job situation, one of the chief complaints, for years, the whole thing about minimum wage, that was the biggest political football out there. Not so much anymore.
Well, you say that, but California went to $20 minimum wage for fast food workers yesterday.
And immediately, as recently as about 60 days ago, you had some of the pizza chains, Pizza Hut being the biggest one, saying, we're laying off all of our drivers. We can no longer, we cannot afford to pay these guys $20 an hour to deliver pizzas. So we're laying them all off. So now, if you want a pizza delivered in California, you're calling Uber Eats or some other company that delivers food, and you're paying them premium to get that pizza delivered to you, which I think is going to impact their business models across the board. You got to ask yourself, how much is enough? You know, everybody wants a $20 an hour minimum wage or $15 an hour minimum wage. And we've been hearing this talk for years now. And some communities in some states have gone to this model. How is it really impacting things to force business owners to pay $15 or $20 an hour when the federal minimum wage is still sitting there at $7.25 an hour? We don't even talk about federal minimum wage anymore. It's a moot point. No politician even brings it up anymore. It is no longer even a valid argument for them from a political standpoint. How is it really impacting?
Well, I think some would say that it became irrelevant during COVID and this whole quiet quitting thing. I actually think that's a cop-out. I think as baby boomers are retiring, there are fewer people in the workforce today.
Yeah.
Those baby boomers are demand consumers. They got money in their pocket. They want things. So it has ratcheted up the demand for people. Yeah. And shortage creates price increases. And so wages have gone up. You know, we don't ever deal with companies these days that are less than $15 an hour. And, you know, we just don't ever see it.
Right.
And I don't think it's a function of quiet quitting. I think it's a function of, you know, when we look at, you know, the country, there's about 4 million unfilled jobs right now in the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can talk there. The federal government says, this 300,000 jobs created last year. Well, I don't know how they get those numbers. because we certainly didn't create 300,000 more workers.
No.
Yeah, last
month. They come up with some pretty creative math.
And
for sure.
So, but what we know is workforce participation rates are all-time lows. So that's the people who ought to be working that aren't in the workforce. Some of that's baby boomers who said, you know what? I figured out during COVID, I got enough money to stay home.
Yeah.
And I'm done. So we'll work through all of that. But this idea that, you know, it's really driven by the unions of we've got to ratchet up minimum wage. We're not going to get these people to join our union if they're making $7 an hour. But if they're making $20 an hour as a fast food worker, we can convince them to join the union because now we can go get them health care benefits or now we can go get them, you know, 6 weeks vacation. And so it's all we're all just playing games here on that. And, you know, I think we're better off just staying out of the fight.
And it drives the prices of everything up.
Well, sure, of course it does.
I mean, that's one of those deals. Yeah, everybody's making more money, but you're paying more for stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, I just read recently, I think it was it Connecticut or somewhere up there, McDonald's. They said now you have to make at least $45,000 a year to be able to feed a family, to afford to feed a family of four at a McDonald's. You know, a Big Mac meal is, like, you know, $18 and change. I mean, you know, the whole – and my wife and I had this – because my wife worked as a fast food manager for years and years. And we had this conversation the other day. I said, you know, what were the – for years, what were the two biggest appeals of fast food? Number one, quick meal. And number two, inexpensive.
Yep.
Value. It was always seen as a super value. You know, I can go to McDonald's or Burger King or Whataburger or wherever, and I can get a complete meal for.
By the way, you're all getting bills for this advertisement.
You sure are.
Well,
$7, $8,
five,
whatever.
That $5 footlong didn't exist anymore. I swung in, it was $12.
I know.
Dang, I don't know where that happened.
I don't know either. So I mean, now it's you know, you get the coupon. It's like $20 for two or something. You know, but you got to have the coupon. That's it. But here's the thing, though. As far as jobs and industry go, here locally in our city, you're constantly working to try to bring new things here. Now, I want to talk about a couple things happening right now. So we've got two brand new high schools that are about to open.
Yep.
That's going to certainly impact at some point.
It is.
Deeply. And then also we've got this new hemp processing plant.
Panda Biotech.
Which is now, I guess, are they fully operational now?
They are operational. I don't know that they describe it as fully yet. Uh-huh. They're still running enough stuff that they got glitches and they go back and fix it. And you want a soft open a restaurant. You want a soft open a manufacturer.
For darn sure. Yeah. You don't want to start that line cranking and going and have a whole bunch of product. Yeah.
It's not like it's an industry where we have years and years and years of history and experience to work from.
To examine.
This is brand new to us as a country.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp is something that was not legal for 8 or 9 decades. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, we're embracing it again, and we've got all these industrial uses and consumer uses for it. Literally hundreds, if not thousands, of products can be generated from hemp. It really has the potential. That company alone right there has the potential to have a huge economic impact on us, does it not?
Absolutely. We have a downstream company for them in town on Thursday. And so we're meeting with them to talk about, you know, there's no reason to take that product from the plant and haul it 200 miles to make something out of it. Let's make that thing right next door.
Yep.
Let's figure out how we make that happen.
Yeah. And I was going to say, explain to people what you mean by downstream company.
Yeah, so it's a company that would buy products from them, whether it's, you know, hemp. If you go to Europe, all the interior liners, the soundproofing in cars is made out of hemp. Because cotton's frankly just too expensive to do it.
Right.
But you've also got, you know, high dollar jeans today are made out of hemp. And you've got hundreds of products, you know, from animal feed made out of hemp to, you know, straw bedding and everything imaginable. Right. If you can do it with cotton, you can do it with hemp and more. And so this company happens to be a company that would buy part of their products from Panda Bio. And have a keen interest in being here. That's why you do those kind of cornerstone.
Right. And then to tie it together, it also goes upstream. You get local farmers, because we have farmland around here, obviously. Uh-huh. You get local farmers that grow hemp. Yeah. Once again, you're not having to haul your hemp in from,
that's right.
You know, parts unknown, as they used to say in the old WWF thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know how that's going as far as them recruiting? I can't really use the word recruiting farmers locally.
It's not going as well as Panda would like, but farmers are cautious. You know, they got to worry about the weather. They got to worry about, you know, timing. They got to worry about dust. They got to worry about all these things. If they know something, they're much more likely to stick to it. Right. So you're going to have to prove it out a little bit, have a couple of farmers do it. Then then they're bragging at the cap. Hey, damn, you should have been in on this. I made a hell of a lot more money than
right.
you did on absolutely. Cotton.
Well, I know
and this uses a tremendous amount of less water than cotton.
I was going to say,
that's what makes it so important for us.
It's a very drought resistant crop.
Absolutely.
It doesn't require as much water to keep it alive. It doesn't consume as much. It's going to be better. It's also going to be better for the soil.
Yep. Right, and it doesn't take as much. I don't know a lot about hemp. I know quite a bit more about growing cotton, but cotton is very hard on soil.
It is, and I took a tour back last November at the plant when they were just getting all this equipment in, getting things set up. They hadn't started processing anything yet. I was really impressed with what I saw. One of the things, though, that most impressed me about Panda Biotech is the fact that there's zero waste out there.
Yep.
Absolutely every aspect of this product, from the raw bales that are brought in all the way to the end, the very dust that is generated from the processes that are put in place, even that is reconstituted into another product.
Into pelletized cattle feed.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. There's zero waste.
You know who else has zero waste in their plant? Jack Daniels.
If
you ever get a chance to go through the Jack Daniels plant, seriously, there's no waste in their plant. Everything is the charcoal that they filter everything through, after that gets kind of used up to its life cycle, they compress it and make charcoal briquettes out of it. The mash and all the leftover stuff, that goes to local pig farms and stuff like that. So it's pretty, I think that's also, I kind of love that whole thing. I like efficiency.
Well, I've heard that they have the happiest pigs in the country, right?
Yeah. They're close to
that. Now I know why. Yeah. So what can you tell us about other industries, other things coming to our area? What things can we talk about?
So, you know, I think the most exciting thing is that people see but don't realize is we have $747 million in new construction kicking off this year in this community.
It's amazing.
Right.
Set $750 million. And we know that we're going to actually add to that number by the end of the year.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get, we'll probably get to $800 million. I know we'll get to $800 million. And there's no time in our history that that's happened.
Mm-hmm. We have
and then we combine that with looking at, okay, what are these, is this construction going to change? Well, we're going to see massive amounts of laborers in the community.
Right, right.
And then if we can keep up the momentum, we'll capture those laborers to stay here and move.
Right, right.
We know that, you know, we have new industries moving in. You know, we were at the city council 6 weeks ago or so. Council approved sale of 28 acres to the industrial park. You know, we'll get announced that when the property closes, it'll get announced who the deal is. But it's a big distribution center deal that everybody in town's jaw will drop because it's like we didn't think we'd ever get them. And I think part of our problem is we don't think enough of ourselves.
Right.
We are a great place, and we have got to celebrate that. You know, we're focused on hydrogen.
Yeah.
I don't know a dang thing about hydrogen, and nobody does. I'm figuring out.
Yeah. But, you know, it's on the periodic table.
Yeah, I lived in Corpus Christi for years and hunt there, you know, on the lease every year. But what I know is that they make a lot of chemicals there.
Yeah.
They don't make any products out of those chemicals. And I don't want that to be us. I don't want to produce hydrogen and then have it all leaving by truck and go manufacture things in other places. I want to make sure we're capturing that.
Right.
And the company doing the hydrogen plant has been an incredible partner with us.
Good.
And you know, we're meeting with them regularly to talk about who your customers are going to be, how do we make sure they're here.
Yeah.
Data centers are going to be huge.
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking mega scale data centers. So we're talking about investments that are in the billions, not hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars. And that's all about two things. It's all about having power and all about having land. And so we're lucky that Encore has three distribution lines that go through our area.
Yeah.
And so we've gone very aggressively at data centers. You know, a billion-dollar data center may employ 150 people. Those are $100,000 a year technical jobs.
Yeah.
But imagine adding $3 or $4 billion to the city's books, to the tax rolls on that. We're talking about massive amounts of change. And so you're going to see, and I would be shocked, you know, never project your horse is going to win the race, but I'd be shocked if we don't get two or three.
Well, it's
you got to build them too.
That's right. Yeah, and they got to be built.
Yeah,
even at the ground level, of course, like you said, you're right. When we get those laborers that come, first off, some of the labor is going to come from Wichita Falls already because we already have people live here.
Right.
Secondly, the people that have to come in once we get a chance to sell them our city, and maybe they'll stay here. But even if they don't, they're still going to live here temporarily. They're still going to eat here. They're still going to get gas here. There's still going to be a lot of dollars that are spent that are dropped into that top, that big funnel that are dropped in right at the beginning, and then it starts bouncing around, and then that just creates more and more.
Well, you've got sales tax revenue. You've got hotel occupancy tax revenue. You've got all of the spending that, like you said, that goes in the top of that funnel and works its way down. And then if you're able to capture, you know, 3%, 5% of those people, whatever, to stay here, now you've added to the tax rolls. It's exciting for somebody like me in the real estate business to know that we're going to be adding more people. We're going to build more homes.
Yep.
We're going to have more residential structures here, not just apartments, but houses. We're going to increase our capacity to keep people here and house people here.
And we have the space to do it.
That's what we have the space to do.
Interestingly, I met last week with a developer in Denton, but it's a different developer in town yesterday, who are building these models of, they call them apartment communities, but they're not apartments. They're individual houses. Mm-hmm. So think of it as over 50 retirement village, only there for families.
Yeah, my daughter lives in one in McKinney. It's a duplex. They're duplexes, but they call it apartment homes.
Yep.
And it's like, it's a duplex.
But these guys that we both met with are doing individual, single family. They're talking 200 to 300 homes, all rental. Why that's important is the base housing is miserable right now. And, you know, there's no housing around the base. There's no housing for new folks to move in the community. I mean, I was just out at the base. They got dozens and dozens of people living in RVs because they can't find housing to rent in the community.
Right.
So if we're going to grow the community, we have got to grow our rental base, our sales base, every variation of those houses. And, you know, when we talk about recruiting, we need to start heavily recruiting military retirees. And so you'll see in the fall, we'll come out with a strategy going after military retirees, targeting high-skilled people to fill the jobs that are available here.
Right.
So no more can we as a community look and go, well, you know, I'm sorry, Trey, it's your responsibility to recruit the techs you need. And if you can't do that, well, your business will suck, and that's all you. But instead, we take an enlightened self-interest and go, well, Trey fills those jobs. Here's what that job's worth to us in property tax and sales tax and in school fees from Austin. Here's what that's all worth to us. So why wouldn't we help Trey fill that job and help recruit that guy? Because it grows our population base.
Right.
And so we're going to have to be more aggressive than anybody else thinks is sane. But if we do that, and say, oh, by the way, we now have schools that are as good as those to the south of us.
Yeah.
We are now able to compete and tell our story in a way we just haven't been able to in the past.
If you could identify any one thing that we haven't done or are not doing currently that we should be doing that can really help us turn the corner, if you will, What would you can you pinpoint any one thing that you think is like super critical that we should be doing?
I think we have to focus, and this is not what you're going to think I'm going to say, on community beautification. When we have a prospect come in, company visits us, they have just come from the Metroplex. Mm-hmm. So they have just left some of the most beautiful small cities in America.
And everything's new.
And everything's new.
Fresh.
Well, we're not new, so we're not going to be able to do that, and we don't have the money to bulldoze everything. But we do need to start focusing on planting flowers in front of our businesses. We need to focus on fixing the sidewalks. We need to do, in New York City, they called it the broken windows theory. Mm-hmm. As soon as they started fixing the broken windows, crime went down. Uh-huh. People started moving back to neighborhoods. Things started to happen positively. Yeah. We've got to do that across the city. And if we can do that, because when I started interviewing here, I actually had a buddy call me who was leaving the community and say, hey, you ought to move to Wichita Falls. It's not a pretty place, but they're the nicest people you ever met. And people repeat that to me. We're not a pretty place, but we're the nicest people I ever met. We can be a pretty place. Yeah. Have you driven around the university? Hell, it ain't a place any prettier than that.
Yeah.
No. You know, we can do this, but we have to decide we're going to do
it. Part of it's our entry, where we come into town.
Yep.
And, I mean, when you drive in town, of course, everybody talks about Atterbury. We all understand that. Not only that, the Foundry's right there, which the Foundry is a great place. But I would be in favor for the city to go to the Foundry and say, hey, can we paint your roof for you?
Yep.
Put a big welcome to Wichita Falls right on the roof of the Foundry.
Yeah.
I mean, why would they say no? Exactly. If it's not going to cost them a nickel, right. those are some things that we could do, because I think you're right. Yep. You drive around certain parts of town and you do see some beauty, but when you drive into town, mm-hmm. that's our biggest problem, is driving into town from some directions, especially from the south.
Yeah. Well, it's just like where that derelict hotel is by the falls.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I can't wait to see that thing come down.
There, that court case is next week or the week after. Where, where the city is with the condemnation panel, I think it's a panel, not a judge, and making the case of what that property is worth and that the city can acquire it and tear it down. So the city is doing everything in their power. You know, they had a deal with the owners. The owners crawfished on them, backed out of the deal, trying to, frankly, stick up the taxpayers for more money.
Yeah.
But it's clear they're not going to operate a hotel. They've torn all the electrical out. They've torn the wiring out. This thing's coming down.
It would cost so much money to turn that back into a usable, viable
hotel property. It's
not worth it. Property.
To bulldoze it and rebuild.
Exactly. It's not worth it. And it's going to flood again. Yeah, we know it will. Every time a frog pees in that river, it floods over there.
Yep.
It's going to flood again.
Put the water slide back in.
The
water slide?
I remember the, yes.
There was a water slide out there.
Yeah.
I've seen the picture.
Many years ago. But I think that would be a great place for either an extension of Lucy Park or an additional city park. And a great place to create, if you will, a community billboard of sorts that invites people, that welcomes people into town. Because as you're entering Wichita Falls, as you're getting in toward downtown, that's the first thing that you see coming in from the north.
It's a billboard.
Is that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I think, the city has acquired the ground between the visitor center, RV park, and the hotel. City now owns that piece between them.
Okay.
And so I think clearly it's being acquired for public space.
Yeah, good. That's good.
And
yeah.
So then how it gets activated in the future, people smarter than me will figure that out. Yep. My answer to everything is live music venues. I think if we can just have more live music venues, we become stickier and stickier and stickier.
Yeah.
But they'll figure it out.
Well, I know there's a lot of people that will kind of moan and groan and complain about Wichita Falls. I mean, there was this little cabal of people that seemed to, they sit on Facebook all day long and talk about what a horrible place Wichita Falls is. What say you to them?
I don't get it. I moved here by choice.
Yep.
It is a great community. It's a good community that's on the precipice of great.
Yeah.
We just announced the largest, industrial investment in the community's history. And at Westlake Chemical, they make the big PVC pipes.
Uh-huh.
130 probably is going to go up from there because of inflation. $130 million. That's a company that believes in us.
Right.
We have 700 $47 million. All of those are dollars that say we believe in this community. Mm-hmm. We believe this is a place. None of those are remedial dollars. None of those are like, here, you know, we got to do it because your sewer plant died.
Right.
No, we're making good decisions. And, you know, there's the old story that the guy who, you know, pulls up to a town and is getting gas, and he says, well, I'm moving to town. What kind of place is this? And the guy next to him says, oh, well, it's, you know, what kind of place do you come from? He said, well, an awful place. He goes, damn, we're an awful place. And the next guy pulls in, and the guy's watching him, and pulls in and says, hey, I'm moving to town. What kind of place is this? And he said, oh, it's a great place. What town are you from? Oh, I'm from a great place. Well, we're a great place. And the guy, he pulls away, and the guy says, well, hey, you told one thing and one the other thing. He said, yeah, well, I figured out most people get what they want out of this world. And if you want it to be a great town, we're going to be a great town.
Amen.
If you want it to be a lousy town, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And we'll be a lousy town.
Yeah, we don't want that. So.
No, we don't. We don't at all. Well, Ron Kitchens, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. We've got so much more we can talk about, and we would like to have you back. I'd like to see you join us on a regular basis.
Please.
And talk about, you know, what's going on economically in our community and what the development plans are, how things are progressing. You know, you're right. You know, people, all this investment, this is people choosing to be here. And choosing to invest in our community.
Every one of those dollars is smart dollars. They could have gone anywhere else. They're fungible. They could have gone anywhere else, but they came here.
Yep. That's right. Well, Ron Kitchens is the president and CEO of the Wichita Falls Chamber of Commerce. Ron, we appreciate your time, and we look forward to having you back soon.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Guys, thank you for joining us for this episode of Get It Right Tech Soma. You can get us, obviously, if you're watching, on YouTube, so you know it's there, but it's on you. For those of you listening on Spotify or Apple Podcast. You can also see the video version.
Yeah, not Google Podcast. Apple Podcast.
No. Google's going away.
Yeah. Apple Podcast and Spotify as well. And you can get us that way too. And be sure to like and share our Facebook page. And we want to hear your feedback. Tell us what you think about the program, what you think about the content, what you think about all of it. Good, bad, otherwise. We want to hear from you. Until next time, you guys take care. We will see you down the road.